Yes?
Yes.
Yes. Yay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm so happy to be back. I spoke here actually 2 years ago today.
Wow.
Amazing. I'll tell you why in a minute, why I know that. Do I have a clicker?
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay. Can I have the clicker? Yeah.
Come on,
thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. We'll make it up as we go along. I'll do that. There. Well, I have to tell you, I love Alaska. I used to live in Fairbanks, Alaska in the 70s, 3.5 winters. Don't we go by winters here?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And I get to come up because I have family here that I'll tell you about. So human beings do two things all day long. These two things bind us as a human race. They create harmony or they create disharmony. The first thing we all do all day long is we breathe. The second thing that we do is we think all day long. According to research, we think approximately 70,000 thoughts every 24 hours. That's a lot of traffic going in between these two short points, 70,000 thoughts. Research places like HeartMath, any of you may know HeartMath. they are an institute out of Boulder, California. And they actually study the power of the thought and what it does. I've been hooked up to some of their machines. And they can monitor negative thoughts and positive thoughts. They tell us that of those 70,000 thoughts, approximately 80 to 90% of those are negative. Now, not in this room, but out in the world. Dr. Deepak Chopra says, that's great, that's fine. But what's even more important is that 90% of those, 80 to 90% of the negative thoughts are the same ones we had yesterday. And people wonder why their lives aren't changing, because we know that thoughts create our reality and they determine the quality of our lives. Isn't that true? So I became fascinated with this topic in 1983, the power of thought. On June 5th, 1983, what happened that day ignited my passion, awakened my purpose, and set the course of my career. So I'm walking down the street in Seattle, Washington, in an area called Pioneer Square. And there's a brick building here, and I look over and I see a man sleeping on the street, and he's kind of leaned up against the brick wall. And immediately I hear my father from my childhood say, he used to call street people, he used to say, those good for nothing Skid Row bums. So I'm hearing that voice in my head, and I look over again. And what I noticed about this particular man is his nails were long, they looked like claws. And he was, his long hair was greasy and dirty. It was draped over his face. And he had on a long green army coat. And have you ever had the moment where life speeds up and stops at the same time? And I looked at him, and all of a sudden my heart began to pound. Just pound. It was like a jackhammer. I couldn't run. I couldn't move. And yet I could feel the nerves. And about that time, he wakes up and he looks at me and he says, wow, Jody, it's you. I went, oh my gosh, Dad. Wow. We haven't seen you for 2 years. You disappeared after the treatment center. Wow. And he sat up and he started to get up, and I moved back a little bit. I needed to make sure that he was sober so we were safe. And we looked at each other for a minute. I could tell he was a little bit nervous too. And I said, you know, Dad, you have a new grandson. He is so beautiful. He's about a year old. And he has flaming red hair and the most beautiful face. And we call him Corey McDonald Anderson. I'm the mom of two sons, Dad. And you know, I'd love for you to meet him. I'd love for you to see your grandsons. So he looked at me and he said, "These streets have become my destiny, and I had no choice, and now it's too late." We chatted a little bit more, and I actually offered to take him to lunch, but he said that he had to meet his buddies down the street, and we both knew he was lying. But as we said our goodbyes, he walked off that way, and I ran back to my car. I never did make it to my appointment that day. And I was sobbing by the time I got there. I was just shaking, and I was sobbing, and I was like, and I sat there for a long time. And when I calmed down, I started to drive home, and I thought, wait a minute. What did he mean by destiny? What is destiny? What is destiny? I don't know what destiny is. And do we not have choice? And you know, when is it too late? And so when I got home, I went to the dictionary and I looked up the word destiny, and I didn't like it. I mean, who am I to argue with Webster Dictionary, right? But I didn't like it. But I knew one thing. I knew one thing that day, that I was not going to end up like that, nor was I going to let my two beautiful sons. I didn't know what it was. I knew that something was up. So about 2 days later, I went to the Bellevue Library in Washington, and I took my babies to the daycare, and then I went to the library, because in those days we didn't have internet. So I went to the library, got a little table in the corner, and I got some books from the religious section, the philosophy section, the psychology section, and the new which was about this big in those days, right? And I just sat and I read and I thought, what is destiny? What is it? The question for me is, what is it that makes a person be successful and a person give up on themselves? What is the answer, and what is destiny? So I found this. I found two things that changed my life forever. This quote I carried in my wallet for many, many years. This quote is by William Jennings Bryan, and he was a politician. Some of you know him. He was a politician, and he really helped the women's rights for voting come through. He writes, "Destiny is no matter of chance. It is a matter of choice. It is not a thing to be waited for. It is a thing to be achieved." I went, okay, I like that. I like that. And then the second thing I found that day was written by a man who was the chief sage at the king's palace in China 2,500 years ago. This is how old our philosophy is. It's ancient. Lao Tzu went on to write the Tao Te Ching, which is the second most sold book on the planet next to the Bible. He writes, "Watch your thoughts. They become your words. Watch your words. They become your behaviors. Watch your behaviors. They become habits. Watch your habits. They become your character. Watch your character. It becomes your destiny." So sitting in the library that day, I have the answer. I have the answer. Destiny is created by thoughts. I didn't know what that meant, because I had some real stinking thinking in those days. But I had my answer. About 2 weeks later, after finding Dad on the street, my sponsor in the 12-step program that I was involved with said, "You know, there's this really weird church in Seattle, Washington. You might want to go. It's called then the Seattle Church of Religious Science." So the next Sunday, she and I went. We sat in the back row, and over the years, I've seen people in the back row crying like we did. There were two ministers that day speaking, Dr. Jim Munson, some of you may have known him, he was a big leader in the 80s, and his wife, Reverend Mary Jean Munson at the time, that was his wife. And they both stood up and they said one thing. They said, you know what? You can change your life by changing your thinking. I went, wow. I signed up for ministerial school that day. I didn't know who Ernest Holmes was. I didn't care. I knew that I had found a home. I found people that could help me figure out how to change my thinking and how to do what I needed to do. So, as your wonderful minister, by the way, he is renowned in the Denver area, very well loved, by the way. Yeah. Yeah. As he said, I've been in the human happiness industry for a very long time. And I have, and especially as a hypnotherapist, I have come to believe that there are five different ways of thinking. We only have time for three this morning. So the first way is, and this is the most common, the victim thinking. Victim thinkers, you can always tell a victim thinker because they'll say things like, he did that to me, she did this to me, and I had no choice. Victims tend to blame others and they tend to shame others. The 12-step program says that there are three things that block the sunshine of God. Victims tend to hang out and block the sunshine of God in these three ways. First one is arrogance. Not me. I'm not the problem. You're the problem. I hear this in my office a lot. The second way is the love of calamity, drama, trauma, and chaos. And the third way is materialism. Now, the 12-step program is not saying don't be wealthy and don't be material, but it is saying, like New Thought says, don't make this money or whatever it might be the source of your happiness, because if you do, you're going to have a big ouch, okay? But by all means, allow yourself to be wealthy and healthy. So victim thinkers tend to judge other people by their behaviors. They judge themselves by their intentions. Again, I hear this in my office all the time. Well, I mean, I didn't intend to hurt that person with my behavior. And in my office, we say, but you did. So let's look at your behavior. Let's look at your behavior. Now, we all have times and we all have moments where we feel victimized, right? Is there anybody in here who's never felt this? We all have those moments, and that's okay, but we don't want to pitch a tent here. We don't want to create our lives from here, because if we do, we will regret our lives at the end of the day and at the end of our lives, like my dad did. Victim thinkers tend to be perfectionistic about other people and not about themselves. Sister Joan Chittister, she's a Catholic nun, writes, "Perfectionism is the neurosis of those who believe that life was made for us to control rather to grow into. No, life is not about becoming perfect. It is about becoming whole, becoming complete, becoming fully alive human beings. And that is never perfect. In fact, it is messy to the max." In order to go from victim thinking to the next level of thinking, we have to go through the doorway of choice. We have to believe we have choice in life. And there are times when you go, I don't see the choice, I don't know it, and we can hang out in the I don't know until the choice comes through. There's always a choice point. We move on to what we call explorer thinkers. Explorer thinkers they're so much fun to be around because they begin to learn about their own personal power, and they'll say things like, you know what I did today? I created a parking spot right in front of the front door. And I created a palace and a partner all in one day. People tap into their own personal creative powers, and this is what I believe our New Thought churches are about. How many of you have taken Foundations or Science of Mind 101? Did it not change your life? along with all the other classes. It is such a powerful class. Explorers tend to understand that they are responsible for the quality of their own lives. Explorers wake up to their own creative powers, and they understand that their behavior is an outpicturing of their beliefs. All behavior is an outpicturing of our beliefs. Explorers judge other people for their intentions, and they judge themselves for their own behaviors, or they discern. Explorers do one thing that changes the entire consciousness of the entire planet, and that is they begin to forgive other people. But most importantly, they begin to forgive themselves. We all make mistakes. In order to go from the explorer to the next one, we have to go through the doorway of trust. The next level is the brave thinker. What are we trusting? We are trusting our own wisdom, and we are trusting that we live in a universe that loves to love and support us. The doorway of trust. Brave thinkers know what they want, and they create their lives from their values. Brave thinkers love their lives. When I was the senior minister at the Portland Church of Religious Science, this wonderful woman come in one day, and I knew who she was because she used to sing at our church. She was a very famous local jazz singer, and she would sing at night in her sequiny dress that was, you know, down to here and up to here, and then she would show up in church and sing on Sunday morning. It was very fun. Loved her. So she walks into my office, Leslie walks in, and I go over and I hug her. And she starts to cry. I go, what's going on? She said, you know, I'm so frustrated. I don't have a right to be frustrated. Everything's going well. But I'm not doing what I want to do. I went, oh, so you're experiencing what we call divine discontent. She went, oh, yeah. So I said, what do you want to do? She said, you know what I want? You know what I want, Jody? I want to see my name in lights on a marquee on the strip of Las Vegas. Well, honey, I kind of think you're going to be moving out of Portland soon to Las Vegas because I don't think it's going to happen here. You got to go where the people are. She said, oh, I can't move. Oh, no, I can't move. I own a home. I have my family here. I mean, my kids are grown, but my mother's here, and I have 6 months of gigs planned. I can't leave Portland. And I said, oh, so you're dealing with your BS. She looked at me, and she went, what? I said, yeah, your belief system. Oh. I said, Leslie, people sell their house every day to go and fulfill their dream. And what would happen if you sat your family down and said, this is what I want to do? And what would happen if you went to all the managers in the lounges where you have scheduled gigs for the next 6 months and said, after 90 days, I'm not going to be here? And what would happen if you bought a one-way ticket to Las Vegas in 90 days? So that night, she went home, she sat her family down and said, this is what I want to do. And they went, well, yeah, yeah, we'll help you. This was on a Monday. Tuesday, she put her house on the market. Friday, she bought a one-way ticket to Las Vegas. Never mind that the check bounced. She had her ticket. It's okay. She talked to the different lounge owners, and they all went, we love and support you, go. So the day comes, she flies to Las Vegas, she gets off the plane, she takes the bus to the strip because she doesn't have a lot of money. She has her little suitcase and she has a list of places that she wants to go into. She goes into the first one and lo and behold, the manager just happened to be there. And he said, would you like to audition now? And she went, sure, yeah, I'm not too busy. So she auditions and he went, oh my gosh, you are amazing. Could you start tonight? She went, well, yeah, no, I'm not doing too much. She's thinking, I don't even have a place to stay. So she goes, she gets a hotel room, she puts on her beautiful gown, she comes back to work, and she meets the piano player. Ah, not only does he play a great piano, for those of you who have really, really a lot of gray hair, you will know the name Buddy Greco. Yes? Okay. He used to play for Frank Sinatra. He's playing that night. They meet, they play, they fall in love. She meets her future husband that night. They have now traveled the world. They do cruises. They now live in London. They have played in theaters all over the world, singing and dancing and doing what she does best. 2 years after she arrived in Las Vegas, she called me. She said, "Oh, Reverend Jody, today my name is going in lights on the marquee on the Strip of Las Vegas." Isn't that wonderful? Leslie Anders. So, as I said earlier, I'm the mother of two sons. And when my two boys were little, starting very little, because I had just gotten into science of mind, I said, if you really want to be successful in life, you have to do three things. You have to manage your thinking. You have to trust your wisdom. Don't let anybody else tell you, including me, although you got to listen to me, but including me. And you have to follow your heart. So when Corey, who was one the day I found Dad, when he was in college, he called me, back up. He got a job as a kayak guide in Ketchikan, Alaska, between his second and third year of college. He calls me at the end of the summer, and he says, "Mom, can you talk?" Have any of you ever gotten that? You know, whatever I'm doing, I'm stopping. And he said, "Mom, I don't want to go back to college. I don't want to sit in one more room, listen to one more boring teacher, although I've had plenty of wonderful professors, and study a topic I don't want to listen to. I don't want to study." I said, "Okay, what do you want to do?" He said, "Well, I've been thinking. This is what I think I should do. I think I should, at the end of the summer, come back to Portland. I think I should buy your car for a really good price." I said, "But I love my car." And he went, "I know, Mom, I love your car too. And I think we should pack it up, and I think I need to move to Girdwood, Alaska." "Really?" "And I want to be a professional skier." Now, this kid at age 3, when we put him on skis, he took off. He was one with the mountain. And that's the image I had that day in that conversation. And I said, "Okay, you have my blessings." So he came back. He did buy my car for a really good price. He still has it, actually. And we did pack it up, and he did drive up to Girdwood, Alaska. So not only in the last 12 years has he become an amazing professional skier, he is now a heli skier. He jumps out of helicopters, and he is amazing. And in the summer, he's a kayak wilderness guide. But not only that, he has now gone on and he's becoming a renowned Alaskan photographer. He takes pictures like this. This was my Mother's Day gift as a canvas. This is midnight in February. This is called the Blue Moon. And he and his buddy just decided to climb a mountain. Why not at midnight? So he's making a living as a professional skier, a guide, a heli skier. But the best of all, 2 years ago today, my beautiful son married the woman of his dream. She is so beautiful, and we are so lucky to have her in our family. You know, I get to travel the country, and I get to talk about this, but I don't ever get to introduce them in the middle of my talk. But we're in Alaska, so Corey, could you stand with your beautiful wife, Carrie? Just stand, yeah. I officiated their wedding 2 years ago today at the gold mine in Girdwood. Yeah, it was great. Brave thinkers love their life. Brave thinkers love their life. So what do we do with all this? Well, I have a gift and I have an invitation for each of you. I want to share with you what I think is the bravest thought of all. It is the bravest affirmation of all. Have you ever noticed when you're out in the world, let's say you're at Starbucks or Fred Meyer's or someplace like that, and you're going down the line and the clerk says, or you say to the clerk, "How are you today?" What do people usually say?
Fine.
Fine. What else?
I'm good.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm here.
Most people, pay attention to this, and so my invitation to you is for the next month, listen to what people say. The worst thing that we can all say, and I hear people say this all the time, is not bad. Why? Because the subconscious mind doesn't take in the not. It only hears the bad. So I have come to believe that the greatest affirmation of all is to say, "I am great." Who said that over here? "I am great." So my invitation to you for the next 40 days is when you're out and about and people go, "Well, how are you doing?" You say, "I'm great." Now, I'm not asking you to lie. You may have one of those clunky days. And this happened to me not too long ago. My oldest son was going through some stuff and I was kind of feeling sorrow in my heart. I drove to the bank and I'm thinking, I'm kind of a dark cloud today. I could feel it. So I get out of the car and I brush off my energy and I think, I'm going to walk into the bank because the bank people know me. And I have a favorite teller there, Eric. He's fabulous. And I just didn't want to be the dark cloud. So I walk in and I walk up to him and I, you know, say, "Hi, Eric." And he goes, "Hi, Jody. How are you today?" And I'm thinking, I can't really, because I usually say, "Oh, I'm great. What am I going to say?" So I said, "I'm on my way to greatness." And he looked at me and he said, "You're really having a bad day." Well, no. So, the invitation. Here's the affirmation. I come from greatness. I allow greatness. I am greatness. And I have a gift for each of you. We can just send them around if you'd like. You can put it on your mirror, keep it in your book. This comes from Taoism. I come from greatness. I allow greatness. I am greatness. My wish for you is you have a great, great day today. And thank you all so much for coming. God bless you all. Thank you.